Kevin Sheridan with the NoCillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com. Technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, May 24th, 2009, and this is show number 206. Well, it was sure nice having the week off last week while Steve did all the work. You know, I listened to that show twice more, and I can't decide which section I like better, the rants or the one where Bart's doing all the hiccuping. That was hilarious. I just had a great time with that. That was so much fun. But it's time to put the nose back to the grindstone. We have a lot of fun stuff to work on this week. This week we have a dumb question, two product reviews, a fun tilt shift photography website, an interview about logmein.com, an interview with Slough about his work as an audio engineer, and a very short chit-chat across the pond with Bart, as he's been off setting up a new iMac for his parents in the barren wasteland where there's no real broadband. He couldn't possibly pull off a Skype call. He managed to get one little chat text into me over the whole weekend. We did record a security light last weekend, and I decided not to play it with the four-year anniversary show. It just didn't seem to fit in. So I held it off for this week so we wouldn't go too long without hearing from Bart. With all that work to do, we better dig in and get started.
Dumb.
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 Dumb questions.
Dumb questions.
Dumb questions.
How do I? What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
Well, we haven't had a good dumb question in such a long time. Luckily, Dave Richards has broken the dry spell for us. Here's what he said. Hi, Allison. On show 202, you and Bart talked about how you both like Firefox better than Safari. I also like Firefox better, and I use it on my iMac. But on my MacBook Pro, I use Safari because of the three-finger swipe forward and backward between pages. I've not been able to get this to work on Firefox. Do you know if it's possible? Thanks, Dave. Well, I wrote back to Dave that I was able to find a feature that's built into Firefox. If you hold down the Option, or some people call it the Alt key, and use two fingers to swipe, you can go left, right and left, you can go back and forth between web pages. Works exactly like the three-fingered swipe in Safari. You know what, though? I did have to confess to Dave that I didn't even know about the three-fingered swipe in Safari till he told me about it. I confessed that to him, and he wrote back. Hi, Allison. The three fingers also works in Mail. It'll move you forward from one email to the next and backwards. And if you have multiple files open in preview, it'll go from one to the other. Well, this is just crazy. Am I the last one to know any of this stuff? Did you guys all know about this? Why have you been keeping all this from me? Back on show 202, Gita sent in some advice on how I can supercharge my Mac Windows to compete with how I actually like the windowing better on Windows. Did you follow those Windows on Windows on Windows I'm talking about? Remember a few shows back, I talked about how I liked the way the window management worked on Windows, the kind with the Z. So we're trying to figure out ways to make it more interesting to mess with Windows on the Mac. Well, one of the apps she suggested is called Mercury Mover from heliumfoot.com. I told you that I watched the short screencast on their site, and it actually scared me. All the stuff popping up on the screen, it was really frightening. Well, lucky for me, Keith from Helium Foot Software found out what I'd said, and he wrote to me. We chatted an email back and forth, and he told me that Don McAllister had done a show on Screencast Online where he demonstrated how he uses Mercury Mover. Maybe I wouldn't be scared of it if I watched his show. Well, I asked Don about it, and he said he can't live without Mercury Mover. Well, it was starting to look like resistance was futile, so I was thinking about trying it again. And then Keith kept writing to me, giving me little hints, encouraging me to try the different little things that Mercury Mover could perform for me. So what could I do? I had to do a review. So we have to start with the problem to be solved, right? The problem is my need to have every application open on my Mac at the same time with every single window possible open within those apps. Hey, sometimes I even have seven windows open just for mail, and even though there's tab browsing, I'll have four browser windows open, and everyone has at least six tabs open at a minimum. My desktop is chaos, and I'm constantly moving windows around to try and get things placed just where I like them. For some reason, I like Twitter clients to be on the right. I tend to keep my mail more over on the left side, and Feeder's job is to live ideally suited in the dead center part of my screen. I also have a thing that I don't like the bottom of the feeder window to be too low. I find myself craning my neck down while I'm trying to type if I have it all the way down to the bottom of the screen, so it has to be partway up. So, that's the problem setup. Now it's time to see what Mercury Mover can do about all that. Mercury Mover is designed to allow you to resize and reposition windows all with keystrokes, never moving your hands from the keyboard. You never have to move them over to the mouse. You do it all with the keystrokes. Mercury Mover is a system preference pane, so some configuration goes on over there, but most of it is right inside the application itself. Mercury Mover works in four modes. It has Move, Resize to the right bottom, Resize to the left top, and my favorite, Go to where you belong in the size I told you to be. I'm going to save that best one for last. So you launch the Move portion of Mercury Mover by hitting Command Control Up arrow. So that's when you want to move a window, not resize it. That brings up a gray menu thingy that gives you instructions on how you can move a window. Let's say you need to just nudge it over a smidge. Use your arrow keys and you can move it by a single pixel. That's for the extremely anal amongst us. The shift key changes and adding the arrows lets it go by 10 pixels. If you hold the option key down, you want to go crazy, you can move it by 100 pixels. You'd be surprised how small 100 pixels is. That's actually a normal movement, in my opinion. Now, personally, I'm not sure I'd go to all the trouble of hitting Command, Control, Up, Arrow, and then Left Arrow, four keys to hit so far, to move a window by 1 pixel. Like I said, I'm pretty anal, but I think that's taking it just a bit too far. Again, even 10 pixels is hardly noticeable, but 100 is about something I would probably use. What I would definitely use is the last move option. Hold down the Command key and hit an arrow, and you can slam the window all the way to the edge of the screen, top, left, right, or bottom. So once you've got it in the move mode, you hold Command key and hit the arrow to the left, up, down, or right, and you can just bang it up against the window. That's kind of nice to say, just get slide all the way out of my way. It's kind of nice, too, because it gets you all the way up, since it's all the way up against the edge, there's no little, like, 10-pixel gap wasting space between the window and the wall for you. All right, so that's how you move windows around quickly. What about resizing them? With Mercury Mover, this time use Command Control again, but this time hit either the left or the right arrow. Before we used up, now we're going to use left or right. This is getting kind of confusing. See why I was scared? Takes a little bit of getting used to, but the left arrow tells Mercury Mover that you're going to want to move to the upper left side of the screen. The right arrow says you want to play in the bottom right. Just like with moving the windows, you can resize by 1 pixel, 10 pixels, or the overly dramatic 100 that I prefer. And just like in the move option, we can go to the right screen edges with resize too. To the right, the bottom, the upper left, you know what I'm talking about. So you can resize or move. So, move and resize are pretty cool. But I'm not sure I can keep track of all those keystrokes in my tiny little brain. If you use them every day and all day long, I think they could get stuck in your head. But I'm stuck in Windows half the day, and I have enough trouble keeping the Command and Controls keys straight. That's how I felt when I tried to give up on Mercury Mover, but Keith kept offering gentle encouragement, and then he told me about the parts of Mercury Mover that will keep this in my toolbox. You can, with a single shortcut key, set the size of your window to a specific size. I could so use this on Windows at work. I do these video screencasts, and I set my windows to 1024 by 768 for recording. But I get there in a way that's so convoluted, I can't even begin to explain it here. With Mercury Mover, all I would have to do is launch Mercury Mover and hit the number 1. And it goes to 1024 by 768 automatically. Want it 800 by 600? Hit the number 8. That's it. Want some obscure dimension like 326 by 745? Just create a shortcut in the preference pane for it, and you can do that too. All right, that's pretty darn cool. But I told you the best part I'd save for last. Remember I said I like Twitter on the right, Mail on the left, and Feeder in the middle? This is so cool. Take a window and put it exactly where you want it. Resize it to be ideal for you. Then launch Mercury Mover and assign a single-digit keystroke to it. So I put my Twitter client... Okay, fine, Don, it's Tweety right now, but I plan on hating it. Anyway, I put Tweety over on the right-hand side of the screen. I stretch it to full height, get it exactly where I want it. Pop open Mercury Mover, hit Command-D to tell it I'm going to assign a keystroke to the size and location, and I hit the letter T. Now, whenever I want to put a window there in that size, I launch Mercury Mover and hit the T. Boom, right where I want it. Well, maybe you're not as anal and as big of a control freak as I am, but I bet you want to make things full screen, for example, right? That happens all the time. You can drag your mouse all the way up to the upper left side and click on the green button, But half the time, it doesn't do that anymore. The application just says, oh, you didn't really mean full screen. You meant some random size that I've defined. Well, now with Mercury Mover, all I do is launch it. I hit the S to make it full screen. I define that, and it always works. It's absolutely awesome. I did find that when I switch screens, there's kind of some different dimensions. So if it's full screen on my laptop screen, but then I've got my big screen attached, the definition of full screen is the size of my laptop screen. So you got to think about how that's going to work. It took me a while to get my head wrapped around Mercury Mover, and at first the keystrokes seem a bit overwhelming, but the memorized size and location options are a must-have for me now. I just got the idea of Mercury Mover on Tuesday, but by Thursday it was a normal part of my workflow to slam a keystroke to organize my windows. Mercury Mover will run you $20 from heliumfoot.com, and they have a free trial so you can see if it's as helpful to you as it is to me. Thanks, Keith, for gently pestering me to learn how to use it, and thanks, Gita, for recommending it. Another application Gita recommended to me for filling my window management needs is called Zoom 2. That's spelled Zoom/2. It's from coderage-software.com. I was pretty happy with Gita's first recommendation, so I thought I should give Zoom 2 a chance. So when I installed Zoom 2, it offered to give an interactive demo. I thought that meant a video, and I was where I couldn't really listen, so I muted my Mac, but it turns out they meant exactly what they said. They tell you a step to do, and they get you to practice it, and then they move you on to the next step. If you're successful executing the step they just taught you, you get a congratulations message. This is the first tool I've ever tested that has such a demo. It was brilliant. Within a few seconds, I knew what Zoom 2 was for, I knew how it worked, and, I'd like to see more application developers use this idea. It worked really well. So enough teasing. What does Zoom 2 do? It allows you to move and resize windows incredibly easily. You hold down the Command-Shift key, and then you can click and drag anywhere in a window to move it around. No hunting around for the top bit of window to drag it to move it. This sounds a little weird, but I did it like twice and suddenly it was in instinct. Command shift and I can move a window by clicking literally anywhere. How many times have you had a window that's kind of slid off the screen and you can't reach the top part of the menu bar because you keep hitting the buttons instead? This is just any piece of the window you can find, you'll be able to drag it right back in. To resize a window, any window, hold down Option shift and then click and drag. Like any normal resizing on the Mac, it's actually only pulling the bottom right corner around, but it's completely fluid as you do it. It's amazing. Again, the freedom to click and drag from anywhere in the window is so different from trying to find that teeny little corner piece on a window in OS X, especially if that teeny little corner thing has fallen off the screen. The only application I found that it didn't work in so far was it didn't work in Excel. It kept selecting the cells in Excel. But so far, everything else I've tried it in worked just fine. It's unfortunate since Excel has a habit of misbehaving on my Mac and sliding the window up behind the menus and stuff like that. So, guess what? That's all Zoom 2 does. It's simple, it's sweet, and it works perfectly, and it solves a real problem in OS X Windows use. You can have this ease of use for $15 US. If moving OS X windows around makes you nuts, $15 is well worth regaining your sanity. It's about time someone solved that problem. Check out Zoom/2 from coderage-software.com. Well, I like that both of these tools, Mercury Mover and Zoom 2, have solved different parts of the problem. If you want windows resized and located to specific places, go to Mercury Mover. If you want fluid control of location and size, go with Zoom 2. There's something for everyone. Control freaks and wild hippie types, we can all be happy now. I'm still working down the list of enhancements to ScreenSteps 2.5. It's a long list of everything they've put into this tool. I can't believe they're not charging for this upgrade. Let's see, I don't think I mentioned yet what they call improved workflow for creating and exporting manuals. Man, that sounds official. Let me explain what it is. In ScreenSteps 2, it was a little clumsy to move back and forth between lessons within a manual. So remember, manuals are big, serious things with stacks of lessons inside, and then inside lessons are the steps. So in the old days, if you wanted to change lessons, you had to back all the way out to the manual and then back down into the lesson that you wanted. Now in 2.5, you get three icons at the bottom of the page. You can click left to go to the previous lesson, click right to go to the next lesson, or click the button that says Choose Lesson, and then that way you can go directly to the one you want. It's a tiny little enhancement, but it makes a big difference in the efficiency of your workflow in creating beautiful manuals. If you'd like to give Screen Steps a try and see how much it helps you in work, play, or even helping yourself to remember complicated steps, they have a free 30-day trial over at screensteps.com. When you realize you can no longer live without it, use the coupon code NOCILLA, that's my name spelled backwards in all capital letters, to get 25% off. A few weeks back, my friend Mario called me up to tell me about how cool LogMeIn from secure.logmein.com is and how well it solved a real-life problem for him. I told him, quit talking, don't waste it. Wait until I can get you on Skype so everyone can hear your story. Here's that interview. I think you'll enjoy it. Well, I'd like to introduce a very special guest today, a gentleman named Mario Obejas. Now, you guys hear me talk a lot about open source software, and you know, whenever I bring up open source, I always say, but make sure you obey the license agreements, because just because it's free doesn't mean you can abuse your privileges with the vendors. Well, I get most of my influence on this from Mario Obejas, because he is an expert in this field, a subject matter expert. He is the founding member number 4 of the League of Professional System Administrators, and a good friend of mine, and I'd like to welcome him to the show.
Woohoo! Here I am.
How exciting. The way I said I was going to introduce you is as Linux is probably your number one operating system, then the Mac, and then when forced to, you're even willing to use Windows from time to time.
Yes, I have to use Windows at work. That's the way it is.
In fact, I'm
spending more of my time on the Mac than anything else, really.
Oh, you are. Okay, but right now you're on a Windows box.
Yeah. Now, the reason for that is, and it probably has more to do with form factors, I wanted to help my mom with this remote stuff, and my desktop has a 22-inch testosterone monitor, and I needed all the screen space I could get as opposed to my 13-inch MacBook.
You know, it's funny you would say that, because I built a Windows box for Kyle, and I was really depressed because he was using it all the time. And then I put a KVM switch on it so he could hook his Mac to the big monitor, and all of a sudden he stopped using the Windows box. It was the monitor.
Testosterone, baby.
You betcha. All right, so you had a specific thing you called me about, very excited, and I wanted to have everybody hear that story here today.
We'd start with a problem to be solved, right? Yeah, so the problem to be solved is this. Okay, so I'll give you a slightly longer story. My mom, when my sister and I got her a computer, my sister insisted that we get her a Windows computer because all her friends had Windows and everybody who's going to help her is going to be on Windows. Well, that was a crock of because nobody helped her. You know, they're all busy. And let's face it, they're all plain vanilla users too. So she'd have problems left and right, and my sister went and got a Mac in the meantime, and so I'm over here 3,000 miles away trying to help her with crazy Windows problems. All right, so finally she has one problem too many, could have been hardware, who knows. At that point I said, let's get her a Mac, this is the opportune moment, and 'cause nobody's helping her but me. And at the time I realized, it's very difficult to help somebody when you can't really see what they're looking at.
Right, right.
So I researched what were the available options. Now, when you start looking at that, the immediate things people pop up, oh, yeah, well, change your router settings and allow SSH in and run VNC, et cetera. But that butts up against a requirement of mine. My mom is a very naive computer user. She still uses AOL. She uses the AOL client. Getting her to putz around with the router.
Ask her to gene splice while she's doing it, right?
Oh, that would just be a pain point and a half. And in fact, that's what I had this morning, because her router actually died, and I had to go back to, okay, Mom, we're going to set up a PPPoE client, and we're going to do it blind, by God.
You didn't say any bad words during this, did you?
Maybe a few in Spanish. Anyway, so that was one of my requirements. It has to be something that it doesn't require mucking with somebody's router.
Okay.
So I bought the Mac. I had let me back up a second. So I did my research, found lots of good stuff about lots of good reviews about logmein.com, and they'd been around for a while, so it's been through a few paces already. It's not like a just out of beta product, etc. So 4 years in, I thought, all right, that's good. It's got good reviews. A lot of people are. There's a free version of it, which was that works for me too.
So, Mario does like free.
Free is good. Free is really good. Anyway, so I bought the Mac, downloaded the LogMeIn client, and the way it works, you install a client software on the machine that you're going to be doing remote control work on.
Okay.
You do have to select a code, and then you register the system at the logmein.com server. Now, the logmein.com server essentially acts as a matchmaker. When I want to check in, when I want to go help my mom, I have to go to the logmein.com server, enter her code, and then LogMeIn essentially connects us both and gets out of the communication stream. It acts very much like a BitTorrent tracker would.
Okay, let me back up for a second. So when you say you go to the server, do you mean you just go to the website?
Yes.
To logmein.com, you log into your account, and then you give it that number, and then...
Yes, exactly. And when I go to that logmein.com site, what I'm presented, by the way, is here is a list of computers that I've registered, and she's on there.
Okay.
And it does tell me whether she's online or offline. I don't know whether it queries right there at that point in time, but because it doesn't update if she turns it off or turns it back on until I refresh that page.
Okay.
But it does know if she's online or offline.
Okay. So then do you get in through the web browser? Is that how you're viewing her machine, is through the web browser there?
Yes, that's exactly how I'm doing it. They do have, I think it's like 4 different clients. You can download some client software. You can do it with Java. You can do it with strictly HTTP. I think I'm doing it with Java. I haven't explored all the other options to see which one is faster. It's good enough. And
but that also means you can do it from any computer, right? That means you can be at work and you can connect into her thing. You can be at home. You can be anywhere and connect into her machine. You don't have to install a client on your end.
That's correct. If I use the strictly HTTP, that is absolutely correct.
Oh,
and
excellent.
It is multi-platform. It's one of the really good things I like about it. You can do it with a PC or a Mac. Now, in this case, PC being Windows or a Mac. I don't believe they have a strictly Linux version. I haven't bothered to look at that.
Well, if it's through the web browser, why would it matter what OS you were on at all?
Right. I'm just saying it. I haven't firmly established that.
Okay, it would make sense, but not tested. Okay, so
right, like there might be a plugin. I'm pretty sure there's a plugin associated with it for the web browser, and that's what would make a difference.
So I cut you off when you started talking about the performance. How do you find the performance on it?
Well, and that's one thing to be aware of. I am going through, she lives in Miami. I live in LA. So, it's a wide area connection.
Yeah.
With the latency. I find it acceptable. I mean, there's definitely a delay. If I move something on her screen, it takes a little while, but it's not agonizing. If anybody's ever experienced X11 on a Unix box across a wide area connection, it's far less painful than that.
Okay.
So in other words, let's say I move a window that's taking up, say, 2/3 of her screen, and I move it to the right a little bit, it takes a couple seconds for it to fully refresh.
So I use iChat AV with my father-in-law, and I do that on quite a few occasions, and I notice a fair amount of lag with that. Have you ever used iChat? Can you say if it's similar? Or
I haven't used iChat, but that's why I gave that example of if I move a window to the right, I know on some systems you can say don't show the window contents while you're moving. I haven't figured out how to turn that off yet, but that I don't know if I can turn that off because literally it's supposed to show me exactly what her setup is over there. So I'd really have to change her setup to only show like the like a wire cage outline of a window to move. But I may do that.
It's possible that's one of the things you get with the pro version. I don't know.
Yeah, well, the pro version gives you all kinds of other stuff. But again, I didn't need it. So at that point, I quit remembering what the heck they were.
good enough, like you said, right?
Yeah, and again, the beauty of any of this kind of a product is, one, it's cross-platform. Two, the most important thing, you see exactly what that person sees. My mom has a habit of describing things with diminutives. The little spinning ball of death, she called the spinning light thingy. And I'm having to translate these from Spanish.
Nice.
So you can imagine if you can't see it at all, it's the kind of thing I had this morning where I'm like, okay, Mom, what does it say right below where it says not connected? Well, that could be anywhere. No, literally, Mom, just the next set of letters right below that.
You're down to letters, right? I remember doing this with a friend of mine, and I had her on screen. She was unable to click and drag the corner of a window. And I was actually watching her screen in iChat, and she would push on that corner and drag, and nothing would happen. And I could see her doing it over and over again, and I couldn't figure it out. I mean, I'm looking right at it, and it's not working. And Kyle walks in the room, and he's talking to her, too, and he says, are you using a mouse or a trackpad? And she says, the trackpad. She didn't have a way of pushing it in and out. She didn't know how to select it. But that was the thing. It was something physical in the room that she was doing. It's like, whoa, that gets really hard.
Right. Now, and this gets into the whole idea of, okay, pattern matching. I'm a big firm believer in pattern matching. As you know, what is it exactly that you see on the screen? A lot of times when you're helping a user and you're doing it blind, you know, they will go ahead and do extra steps, right? Like, mm-hmm. You say, do you see the apply button? Or do you see the, you know, save or cancel or apply? And they'll click one.
Oh, no.
Right. Like, no, I didn't want you to click it. Uh-oh, now we got to back up.
Just wanted you to read
it. I just wanted you to see, you know, do you see it? You can... The whole beauty of just being able to see that screen is it just makes my ability to help her,
so much
orders of magnitude easier.
Oh, I bet. Well, the things I like about this, I like free. I like the fact that she doesn't have to initiate anything. I do the iChat AV with my father-in-law, and every single time it takes me like 10 minutes to get him to figure out how to start iChat and how to hit share with me. Because for some reason, I can't share from my end. I can't ask to view his screen. I don't know. I'm sure it's a router setting on mine or his end, but I've never been able to crack the code, so he has to invite me. 10 minutes every time just to get to that point. You know, it's like, okay, click on my name, then go up to Buddy, say, share my screen. He goes, what? and we start over again. He goes, click on your name. Where's your name? You know?
let me also talk about some of the privacy things. One of the things that I do like, feature or bug, but I call it a feature. The minute I connect in, there's a little box that pops up that says, that there's a log me in connection and where it's from. I can't get rid of that. I can't iconize it. It is there. It takes up some little small section of your screen. I'd say it's analogous to when you're watching a TV show and they have like the call letters in like a translucent form on the screen. Now, you can't get rid of it. It's there. It's telling you that it's KTLA or whoever it is. This is always there, and it says, you know, there is a log me in connection.
Well, maybe they're doing that on purpose to make sure you realize that, you know, you're still sharing a screen or something. That's on your end or on her end?
On her end.
That makes sense, though, right? You want to be alerted.
But I'm saying you can't get rid of it. You can't iconize it. It's in your face, as in, at least it's constantly reminding you. You can't forget it. You couldn't accidentally iconize it and then, you know,
go to your banking site or something.
Well, or like the person who was supposed to help you supposedly left, but they really didn't.
Yeah. I'm looking at the pricing, and the free version looks certainly sounds fantastic. I'd like to give this a try myself. There's also for the paid version, it's only $70 a year, and if you compare that to go to my PC, it's $180 a year, and that's the only other option I know of that works. And I'm not sure that's even cross platform. Is it yet? They kept claiming they were going to be.
Yeah, I don't know that it is. I know what you're talking about. This just, like I said, I had read a number of reviews on it, and I couldn't find a negative one.
That's great. I think, like you say, your expectations are set at a certain level when the word starts with free, right? You don't expect lightning fast. I think maybe that's what you get with GoToMyPC, but you know, good enough. It's got to be five times as fast as if you can't see their screen at all, right?
Right. Well, what I would urge you to do if you're interested in it, you certainly have a multiple computer household.
Yeah, an excessively multi-computer household. I think they're spawning new ones right now. I don't know.
Right. So you could install it on one of your machines at home and then, you know, see how you do when you're out and about at a cafe or something.
I could technically do it inside, couldn't I? I mean, it would go outside and back in?
You could. And I suppose that's good enough to give you an idea of, you know, how fast it is, et cetera. What I see a lot of people would do with this product is if they're just helping out locally, and that's going to be way faster than my 3,000-mile connection to my mom.
Yeah. You know, you were talking about how to get her to, or what word she uses. Our mutual friend, Niraj, who I refer to on the show as research assistant Niraj, has, what he does is he always describes it by colors. Like he tells his dad, okay, click on Eagle Mail. And I never even noticed that the mail icon has an eagle on it, but his dad knows what he means because he knows what the eagle looks like. Or he'll say, when he's talking to me and he's trying to get me to go to a terminal window on Windows, he'll say the black one. And you know, bring up a black window, and it's kind of an interesting way to do it, to look at, just do something visually, and that would never occur to me. I think of words, but another way to get past the boundaries,
right? But and that's what I call pattern matching, though. I mean, you've got to be able to see it on the screen and be able to describe exactly what it is in with some characteristic that the remote person can identify, whether it's, okay, this thing is highlighted in this color, or
it's the shape,
you know,
or.
Yeah, or, you know, okay, on the upper left side, you know, but in computer terms, we forget how easy it is that, okay, when I say, go up to the menu bar.
Right, well, I'm right there with you.
Right, my mom, the menu bar, eh? So I have to do things, you know, even today, you know, trying to figure out her Ethernet connection. I mean, one of the first things we try to do is, okay, can we pinch the neighbor's cable long enough? Okay, where's the airport connection? All right, mom, go up to where the clock is. You see the clock, right? Okay, what's the next thing to the left of that?
Oh, man. I think I really appreciated it when Kyle became a geek and he would call me up and his immediate thing would be, all right, the internet went out. I had to reset the router and now I'm trying to open those ports for my games. What was I supposed to open the port for World of Warcraft again?
Right.
I was so happy when he got to that level because younger it was like, okay, look for the blue box on the desk, you know, but he came along quite nicely. Well, I still think there's a market for one of my ideas, which was an exchange program for everybody to take care of each other's parents or, you know, relative or whatever. Maybe it's your sister, your husband or whoever, because I don't know about you, but I'm way more patient with strangers than I am with my own family.
No, I that's a true observation. The problem is, I think computer savvy people, When your friends and your acquaintances find out, you know, like anything else, they might venture a question. And there's a certain level where you go, okay, I'll help you because you're family. But I
You're not really interested, right?
You know, well, I've got a quota of friends that I'll help, and that's it. But, you know, I don't want to do a whole lot of Windows bashing, but, you know, on Windows, there's just so many things that can go wrong. People install a whole lot of crap. There's drivers. I have my own two kids at home who have PCs, primarily for the gaming, and, you know, they've developed their rules. No, never upgrade! You know, because the upgrade times are always
the bad times, right?
We don't know.
You know, I actually have made that the new rule, is I have people who call me on Windows, and I go, no, not so much. Not going to be really helping you. Sorry, just, you know, my life is not that long to spend any time doing this. You know, you go find somebody else. I suggested you buy a Mac. You bought Windows. Good luck. I'd be helping you here if I could see what you were doing here, but no thanks.
Right.
It's just not any fun.
Well, it's just more painful
than necessary.
Now, some of that could be, all right, if you like working on your Mac and somebody's got a problem, you go, okay, hey, I might encounter this.
Exactly.
You know, so it's got some value to me.
Right.
But, you know, again, even on Windows, some of the problems are so esoteric.
Just so hard to track down. Huh?
You know, I mean, geez, I've configured all these Windows boxes here the same, yet they exhibit different trouble points, right?
Definitely, yeah.
And supposedly, I'm a pro.
you're supposed to know what you're doing, right?
Yeah, but and the problem is because things vary so much.
Hey, you know, before we started, I said we're only going to talk for 10 minutes, Mario, and I've already dragged you out to 21 minutes now, and I swore I wasn't going to do that, but I think this was pretty interesting, and I think a lot of the users could get some good value out of this. So, again, the site is logmein.com, and I really appreciate you being here with us today.
Sure. Well, like I said, try the freebie, you know, kick the tires on it. It's very simple to do. Check the reviews out for the more paranoid people, and I think you'll agree it definitely has some value.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot, Mario. Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye.
I am definitely going to check out LogMeIn if I need to do any kind of remote support. That looks like a really, really good way to go. I had such a good time talking to Mario. We recorded that ages ago, weeks ago, but I just haven't had time to put it in, so I'm glad we finally had time for it in the show. Well, speaking of ages ago, Bart and I talked a long time ago about a really fun photographic trick called tilt-shift photography. The idea is that if you apply tilt-shift techniques, either using a special, very expensive lens, or after the fact using computer software, you can make real-life scenes look as though they were a small-scale fake model. It's an odd trick and not actually useful in any real sense, but it's such an interesting effect, it has a lot of people intrigued. I really think it's fun. It's a fun little thing to do. The way tilt-shift works is it creates a very shallow depth of field and adds vibrancy to the colors. Imagine trying to photograph a small-scale model. Since it's so tiny, you'd have to use a macro lens that would make things in front of and behind the focal plane dramatically out of focus. With a tilt-shift lens, it does that with glass, literally tilting the lens so the horizontal area is in focus with the top and bottom out of focus. Bart showed us how to create this effect with software called the GIMP about a year ago, April. I put a link in the show notes to his techniques over at bartb.ie. It was really fun to play along and do it myself. I did it over in Photoshop Elements, but his instructions are really good. A lot of fun to see. You can really understand what it's doing if you go through and do it by hand. Well, I'm afraid no longer is it a geek's challenge. Robert Lockman from photographyinthemac.com sent out a tweet that I picked up to a website that'll do all of the heavy lifting for you. The site is called tiltshiftmaker.com. At tiltshiftmaker, you start by uploading one of your own photos. It's best to choose a photo looking down on some objects, like a street scene taken from a tall building, or at least something that's fairly far away. You can do it with people, building, cars, whatever. Next, you're presented with your photo and some sliders to change how the photo will be modified. The default is to have the precise focal plane right along the center horizontal of the photo. But perhaps your picture has the subjects in the upper third. You can use an arrow to drag the center of focus up to the right area, and then you can change how quickly the photo gets out of focus using the defocus gradient control. You can change how much out of focus it gets by using the defocus strength control. I'm making this sound complicated, as usual, but you can just fiddle with these sliders and then hit the preview button, and you immediately can figure out what they do. As I mentioned, tilt-shift photos look more like small-scale models if their colors are overly vibrant, so tilt-shift Maker even has a checkbox to enhance the colors if you choose. I started with a photo I took of Avalon Harbor on Catalina from way above the town, and I ran it through tilt-shift Maker. I put it in the show notes so you could see the effect. It's probably not the most amazing one of all time, but I think you'll get the idea. Tiltshiftmaker.com has links to photo galleries of some amazing tilt-shift photos. I have to warn you, though, you can lose hours of your day looking at these. They're fascinating. If you create a masterpiece of which you're quite proud, they have a link to a Flickr group called Tilt-Shift Maker Photos, so you can make sure your photo is included. I've been having a lot of fun with this, as you can tell, and thanks again to Robert Lachman. You can follow him at twitter.com/photoandmac, so you can learn about all kinds of fun, geeky photo stuff like this from him, and where to find the best coffee in Los Angeles. Well, I've got a pretty interesting interview lined up here. At least we're planning and hoping on being interesting. I have Slough from SessionsWithSlough.com, who's become a friend of mine over the years, and I wanted to have a chat with him. How are you doing today, Slough?
I am doing wonderfully. Thank you so much, Allison. And I have to say, well, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm of course, a long, long time listener to the Nozilla cast. And I have to say to the listeners that I'm one of the few listeners who has had the pleasure and the opportunity to actually feel the wax job on your car.
That's right. That's right. And how did you find it?
At the Portable Media Expo, right?
That's right. How did you find the wax job? Was it okay?
It was gorgeous. You know, the thing is, I could have just been feeling the one spot that was clean. I don't know. I have no idea. But
I think I rubbed one spot up. Yeah, right. Well, I guess we should explain that one of the reasons I wanted to chat with you was because I wanted to talk to you about your recording studio and the work that you do in audio, because you're blind, and I'm fascinated by just the idea of editing audio and not being able to see. Because as a sighted person, I look at the waveform. That's how I can tell where stuff is. And I don't understand how you do that and not be able to see it. I'm fascinated by that.
Right. And to me, it's funny to me, and it's fascinating to me that people would think of audio as a visual thing. It's like me thinking of somebody editing a Photoshop, you know, like a photo by looking at numbers or by listening to a photo.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So that's the inverse.
Yeah. It really is. And of course, I realize that naturally there are so many things these days that are, of course, software-based. I mean, everything's done on a computer these days, isn't it? I mean,
right.
You know, years ago, if you were typing something, you had a typewriter. It was a very physical thing. If you were recording something, you had a reel-to-reel recorder. You had a mixing console, and that was the way you recorded. It was very tactile. But these days, of course, everything is so computer-based. And because of that, all of the controls, everything is pretty much on screen. And in the audio world, you know, if you talk to any professional engineers, the guys who really know what they're talking about will tell you that in a studio, when a client is sitting there watching the screen as they're listening to stuff or they're working on stuff, the best thing to do is to just turn off the screen.
Oh, really?
Because, yeah, absolutely. Because people really get caught up in the way things look rather than the way things sound. Now, don't get me wrong. It's certainly helpful to have things in front of you on a screen and stuff. No doubt, it's helpful. However, people will fool themselves into thinking something sounds a certain way, or they'll say, "Oh, I can hear that edit," you know, and they can't. They can see the boundary of where that edit took place. But I guarantee you that, you know, if you did a good editing job, as you would hope that an engineer would do, you know, a person should not be able to hear any edit points.
I know what you're talking about. A lot of times when I'm laying, say, music up against something I'm saying, I find that I close my eyes when I listen to it.
Oh, Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I shut the monitor off essentially when I'm trying to when I'm just about ready, when I think it's about right, then I close my eyes. I do it visually first and then
yes.
I close my eyes.
And that's a smart way to do it, because of course if you want to line something up and you can see a waveform and you could see that, you know, oh, here's where here's where my vocal comes in. Here's where I'm asking a question of someone, and oh, here's the answer. You could see the difference in the waveform, and it certainly makes sense to use that as your guideline. But when it comes down to the critical part of things, yeah, you definitely want to refer to your ears. I mean, that's the right domain we're talking about, for sure, for sure.
So let me back us up a little bit, because I jumped right into the middle of the plot. So you have a studio, and people come in and do recording sessions with you?
Yes, yes.
So talk a little bit how that works. What's your setup like? What do people do there?
Well, I have a studio here in New York City. It's basically the studio has a live room where I have a grand piano, a drum kit, amplifiers, that kind of stuff. You know, the instruments. That's where the talent, if you will, performs.
So you're not talented.
Or the untalented, right. And then I have a control room, which houses the all of the computer stuff, the interfaces, the microphone preamps, the control surface, all the gadgets, all the goodness, all the geeky goodness. The live room seems to be just such an analog place. Everything is, you know, everything is real in there. And in the control room, everything is so virtual. You know, it's like all in the box here.
Oh, how interesting.
I never thought of it that way, but that's really what it boils down to.
So you're in front of a Mac mixing there, or are you using other equipment most of the time, and the Mac comes into play when you're editing?
Well, the Macintosh is actually the heart of the recording setup. In the industry, we call it a digital audio workstation, a DAW, and I use Pro Tools, which is the sort of the industry standard, most widely used platform for recording. But there are others. As you know, there's Apple has Logic, and you have programs like Sonar, Digital Performer. There are other platforms, of course. There are many, in fact. There are even some open source ones. There's Audacity. I mean, that would be considered,
sort of a digital audio
workstation.
So, so you're when you're editing audio, you're using Pro Tools?
Yes.
And that's accessible. So you can, it tells you what you're doing, or does it use a screen reader? Or how's that work?
Well, it's funny you should ask, Allison. Pro Tools.
Is that a softball I just set up for you?
Pro Tools used to be accessible. The current version of Pro Tools is not currently accessible. And that's a big concern to me and other blind audio engineers and blind musicians and blind students going through music schools or just music programs in schools. Because Pro Tools is so ubiquitous in the industry, it's of concern because, this is the platform that everybody else is using, and currently it's not accessible in the sense that the built-in screen reader in OS X, which is VoiceOver, doesn't see anything in Pro Tools. It sees menus and it sees dialog boxes, but when you get into the main, you know, the windows in... Yeah, it just doesn't see anything. Now, if you were, for example, just to give you an example, there are icons in the mix window, one of the main windows in Pro Tools, and there are icons that are used for routing signals from a particular source to a particular destination, for example. Now, VoiceOver doesn't see it, but if you were to click the mouse on one of those icons that bring up a pop-up menu, well, then suddenly VoiceOver is speaking. You know, it's saying, you know, interface submenu or bus submenu, et cetera, et cetera. It's very chatty.
Which is not what you want.
That's what I want, because I can control that. I can interrupt speech. I can navigate by first letter navigation. I could do all those kinds of good things.
Okay.
However, at the outset.
You have to find it to click it in the first place, right?
Exactly. That is precisely it. So I've been in meetings with Digit Design. It's definitely a long-term process. I met with them a couple of years ago out in San Francisco at the Audio Engineering Society show. And, you know, we're in the process of working toward making it accessible. Now, having said all that, I, believe it or not, am still using OS 9 with, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Because yes. That version is accessible?
Because in OS 9, yes, Pro Tools is almost completely accessible with a third-party screen reader called Outspoken that was manufactured by originally Berkeley Systems and then Alva Access Group. And so Pro Tools is very, very accessible in OS 9. Now, let me tell you that, you know, Pro Tools is essentially, you can think of it as an incredibly powerful recording, editing, and mixing tool, okay? And the hardware that I use to run Pro Tools, which is the interface, you know, is the same interface that you would use on the most recent, on the current version of Pro Tools. The processing is not done by the computer on the version of Pro Tools that I have. It's the hardware. It's the PCI cards that are doing all the processing.
That's good then, because you're having to use an old piece of hardware, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. I still have very current hardware. So for me, it doesn't really make a big difference whether I'm using OS 9 or OS 10.
But it's a future issue, right?
It's
a future issue. Going forward, it could be a problem.
Most definitely. So, of course, the other thing is that the current version of Pro Tools, of course, has all kinds of great new plugins and software, you know, virtual instruments that I don't have access to in OS 9. Now, lucky for me, my work at the studio is primarily live recording, meaning that I'm recording live musicians playing real instruments. I don't do too much sort of, you know, singer-songwriter people that are coming in and using programmed drums or whatever. And for that matter, if a person like that is wanting to do an album, usually they're kind of doing their stuff on their own on a laptop and then bringing sort of the music to me, and I'm just recording their vocal for them, or maybe vocal and guitar or something like that. So it hasn't been a big issue for me yet. But then again, you know, in the future, I certainly would want to be able to make use of the latest plugins and stuff
And also for other blind audio engineers who are not self-employed,
it makes them
so much less employable. And I would think the ADA and people like that would have a few words about something like that. I mean,
I suppose, you know, here's the thing, that there are also some people in the blind community who would also, you know, say, we should bring a lawsuit about, you know, a class action.
That's not your style, right?
And you know what? I personally don't think that that's the best way to approach it.
I think what works is there's different people poking at different pieces. There are the people who are good at going and being rabid on that line, and I think, you know, more power to them if that's what they're going to do. But what you're trying to do is work with the vendor to help them understand what they need to be able to do. And I think a multi-pronged approach might be the best way to go on something like that.
I believe so. I mean, DigiDesign certainly, you know, has been very cooperative with us. They've been they've really spent a lot of time with us. And when I went out for my meeting with them, I mean, we sat around for like 4 hours with two systems, one with OS 9 and my laptop, and I was showing them what the accessibility was like.
Oh, that's good.
Beforehand, and then we had a new system side by side, and I said, "Okay, now you see how this doesn't work. This doesn't work." And one of the guys from the programming team was there. You know, they really spent a lot of time with me, and I do think that they're really dealing in good faith. We're continuing the work. We've given them a list of things, sort of a. I don't want to call it a wish list, but essentially a priority list. Hey, listen, we need access to this and this and this first, because you don't need, I mean, we're not going to get access to the entire program in one shot. We're going to have
to. That's been a couple years, you said, since.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
have they done
and,
for you lately?
And the thing is, what was a big deal for them was that they, you know, the transition over to Intel and stuff was a big deal. They had to basically rewrite Pro Tools from the ground up. And so that really, you know, focused their attention on other things. Right now, they just finished a changeover from their drawing was done with QuickDraw initially,
oh, yeah.
and now it's done with Quartz Extreme. So it's, you know, things have been in flux. But the latest word when I met with them at NAMM, at the National Association of Music Merchandisers in Anaheim in January, that phase was completed. So now they're okay. ready to sort of move on to the next phase.
Okay, so they're continuing to have dialogue with you. And
yes,
okay,
good. Absolutely.
Good, good.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So
well, let's talk
yeah,
a little
so,
bit about your podcast,
yeah,
too.
Go ahead.
Let's. I wanted to definitely plug your show. I've mentioned it a couple of times, at least in mm-hmm. Twitter, and I
yes.
think I've mentioned it on the show. It's
yes.
a well-known fact that I don't actually listen to music, but for some reason, I really enjoy your show.
Well, thank you so much. I know that it is sometimes very geeky, and it can get, you know, kind of tedious with, like, talking about microphones and impedance and transformers and, you know, that kind of stuff that only a real audio geek would be interested in. And sometimes I do stuff that is just a very general interest, you know, talking about a particular session with a particular artist, for example. So
Those are the ones I really enjoy, where you're,
yeah.
you just kind of talk about the personalities. And I remember you talking about, you know, these guys wanted to start at the ungodly hour of 10 a.m. or something like that.
Yeah.
You know? I realized what a different world you live in.
Yeah, yeah. And I enjoy doing those kinds of episodes too, just sort of from a general perspective. I mean, I'm kind of torn, and I think that I might be a little bit possibly a little bit schizophrenic in terms of the content, because my intention at first was to do a podcast, as I say, for the recording musician and studio owner. I mean, that's the little tagline, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I got
so many. You like the general stuff too?
Yeah, no, I mean, but I got so many people who were absolutely not recording musicians and studio owners subscribing to the podcast and writing me, emails and stuff, and saying how much they enjoy the stuff. And it's, you know, so I kind of feel obligated to try and keep it a little bit general as well. So I don't know, like the next episode, for example, is going to be about me recording an orchestra. And this is something I've been doing for the past 15 years. I've been doing it on a regular basis. And I certainly want to get into some of the technical stuff, but I just think that the general idea of, gee, what is it like to travel overseas to record a 60-piece orchestra? It has a general interest
right.
As well. So,
well, the big,
yeah.
best advice I can give you is to make sure it's what you're interested in talking about. Because
yeah.
if it's not interesting to you, it doesn't matter whether it's interesting to them, because you're
yeah.
not going to be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. No, I wouldn't do anything that I wasn't interested in. Certainly, it's you know, and to me, it's what I do. So it's not only that, it's what I love doing. So for me, it's just I love dealing with people, and so for me, working in a recording studio and dealing with creative people on a daily basis and never having the same day twice is what keeps me going. I love what I do. And I'm telling you, sometimes I sit here and I you know, in the middle of a session, and I think to myself, I feel guilty. I feel guilty for getting
paid to do this. Huh?
Yeah, for getting paid for doing this. Now, there are those days, like the other day I had a session where it was just, I don't want to say it was torture. It wasn't torture. It's never torture, but it's just the person was just having a bad day, and they just weren't doing well, and we were doing takes over and over and over again, and it was just so tedious. But then again, you know what? You have to have the rainy days to appreciate the sunny days, right? So to me, it's fine. So anyway.
That's fantastic.
Well,
I've really enjoyed listening to you. I hope you keep it up. I noticed you have not had an episode since April 24th.
I just now. Oh, this has been like such a busy time for me. I went through a. The bathroom remodeling in the studio.
Oh, no.
And so I had to cancel a bunch. No, I had to postpone a bunch of sessions, but there were some sort of sessions that I just had to do because people had no choice. Well, the point is that my schedule just got so out of whack. And
plus,
yeah,
you
people
can't quite
are,
do a recording session when you've got a jackhammer going off in the shower or something.
Precisely,
right?
Precisely.
Actually, that makes a pretty funny podcast. It's
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, people have been, you know, sending me tweets and stuff like that. Are you pod fading already?
Yeah, oh, exactly. God. That's what I wanted to make sure. Okay, you're not pod fading. It was just an interruption in service.
No, I'm definitely not pod fading. Maybe flickering, possibly, but
pod flickering.
not fading. I will definitely get back on the bandwagon, as it were. And
Great.
I have to say, I really appreciate now, especially having done, I don't know, 9 episodes so far of the podcast. I really appreciate the consistency and the stamina that you have. My goodness, to do it every week. Oh my gosh, it's just incredible.
Yeah, and we used to think that you could just be loosey goosey, you know, do a show here, do a show there, wait 3 months, do 5 in a row, that kind of thing. But the customers
you could
do not
do that. You could, but that's just, you know, you start getting emails from people, and then you realize, oh wow, people are listening, and people are sort of they start to depend on your podcast being there.
Yeah,
right?
This is what I do on Tuesday. You know, I have people who say, you know, Monday isn't Monday without a NoSilicast. What do you mean there's going to be no show? You know,
so, absolutely. And I know that you know, as sure as clockwork, when I come into the studio Monday morning, there's NoSilicast. You know, in my feed. You know,
well, you know, so who amazed me was Tim Verporten from the Mac Review Cast. He actually did. If you look at his show, when he hit 3 years, I think it was, he had done a show every single week for 3 straight years, not missing one single show. Wow. He moved across the country twice during that time.
And didn't twice already.
Once over and once back. And the only time he just got knocked off by some surgery he had to go through, and he's now back on the bandwagon. But he's my idol in terms of consistency. So. I do by like having Bart run the show in the summer, that kind of thing.
now Tim Verporten, I used to listen to his podcast, and at a certain point, I don't remember what happened, but I sort of somehow, I don't know whether I had to recreate that that OPML document or something like that, but I have to resubscribe to his show because I remember that I really enjoyed it, and that's now that you mention his name, and you mention him often on the podcast, and right after we get off this Skype call, I'm going to go and resubscribe.
Fantastic. Oh, that's good to hear. Yeah, I Saturday morning isn't Saturday morning without Tim's show for me. So, all right, well, I'm going to cut us off here. So your podcast is at Sessions with Slough. And what's your Twitter name for everybody?
It's Slough B Sharp. That's S-L-A-U, B like boy, E like Edward, S-H-A-R-P.
Great. There's some pun on those things, huh? little audio puns in there. I like it.
Well, too bad. Sessions with Slough was just one character too long.
Oh.
I didn't want to have Sessions with Slough.
That wouldn't quite work. All right, Slough, well, thanks for taking the time to chat with me today, and I think you, if I must say, opened my eyes a little bit about how audio works for you.
Thank you so much, Allison. It was a pleasure.
All right, bye-bye. Boy, I sure enjoyed that discussion with Slough. I want to have him on more often. I just love talking to him. What a fantastic voice, too. If you guys haven't ever been over to podsafeforpeace.org, that's where you can get the PodSafe music song, If Every Day Were Christmas, which I've played before and I've talked about it before, but that's written by Slough. I bought 5 copies of it and gave 4 away for Christmas last year, and I think I did it again this year. So love that song. Love talking to Slough. Sure hope to see him at the podcast or Blog World Expo in Vegas this year. Well, Honda Bob's 30th anniversary picnic is coming up in a couple of weeks, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be so much fun to meet other people from the South Bay who have the delight of having Honda Bob come over, work on their Hondas and Acuras, and have a laugh with him. He's told me so many delightful stories about his adventures with his customers. I can't wait to meet some of them. I hope to remember to bring my Zoom H2 microphone, and maybe I can capture some sound bites to share with you. You know, testimonials. It's going to be great. Should be an enjoyable day. Imagine if you, too, could have the peace of mind that your car was so well taken care of. If you are lucky enough to live in the LA or Orange County areas, and you would like outstanding and convenient in-home care for your Honda or Acura, give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or send him an email at hdabob@aol.com. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, it's time for another exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchas from BartB.ie. How are you, Bart? I've missed you.
I am good, and it has been far too long since we've had our little chit-chat.
Yeah, we don't actually have time for a chit-chat this week because it's the special anniversary show, and there's way too much content, but there was way too much security stuff going on to skip security light. So we're going to power through this as fast as we can, even though there's an awful lot to talk about. So what hit the boards this week, Bart?
Where to begin? I suppose we should start with cleaning up after ourselves. We had mentioned 2 weeks ago about another Adobe zero-day exploit against Acrobat and Reader, cross-platform Linux, Windows, Mac. And it was almost identical to the previous one, which they had patched about a month ago. They've now patched this one. So the flaw looked just like the last one, and some people may mix it up with the one before it. But anyway, patched. So if you're unfortunate enough to run under those pieces of software, you need to let them update themselves.
Now, I've decided to go with your theory. I don't run any Adobe products. With Preview on the Mac, there's no need for it.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah, it's just bloatware. I really, really dislike Adobe software.
I suppose if you had to create PDFs, maybe you'd be stuck with it. But anyway, so patch.
I create PDFs all the time. File, print to PDF.
Yeah. But I mean, create PDFs with forms and all. You know, there's all kinds of powerful stuff you can do with the Acrobat Writer.
You mean all that JavaScript that's causing all these vulnerabilities?
Okay. Point taken. All right. That's the least of our worries this week, though. What's up next?
Next up is your favorite program in the world. Remember we talked about PowerPoint Zero Day and how that meant that no one should open any PowerPoints from anyone until they fixed it?
Right.
Unfortunately, PowerPointing on Windows can begin again.
I heard that productivity went up when PowerPoint was... Everybody had to stop using PowerPoint there for a little while, but okay. So Windows is fine. What about us? What about the Mac side?
We're not fine, and Windows... Well, Microsoft have made themselves unpopular. Perish the thought. They fixed it on Windows, and in doing so, have basically provided a blueprint for what the problem was, and then have said, oh, we'll fix the Mac in June.
Oh, you're kidding me. Oh, that's horrible.
It's horrible and somewhat hypocritical. Because Microsoft are continually going on about what they call responsible disclosure, and their theory on life is that if you find a vulnerability and you tell Microsoft about it, you're not allowed to tell anyone else about it until Microsoft fix it. Even if they don't bother their backside fixing it for a year or 2 years, you should still not tell anyone about it, because that would be irresponsible.
Right. Now they just told everybody about it?
So now they've released the flaw before they've released an update. So yeah, they've broken their own rules. It's quite disgraceful.
Now, as I recall, the PowerPoint, if you have Office 2008 on the Mac or 2007 on Windows, you're okay. It was 2003 on Windows and 2000. What's the one before 2008?
I thought it was 2004, but I have so lost track of all these Office versions.
Yeah, you're right. So if you're on 2003 on Windows or 2004 on the Mac, that's when you were vulnerable. So if you are on 2008, I don't know why you'd have bothered paying for it, but if just in case you did, then you're in good shape. But if you're on 2004, like most people probably are, then you just don't use PowerPoint.
Yeah. The big thing now is that the danger for the Mac users has increased because the bad guys are now getting a helping hand from Microsoft. So it is more likely that someone is going to attack this.
Nice.
So be more careful on the Mac.
So what does be careful mean other than not using it? Was there any,
just don't open PowerPoints that don't get handed to you physically directly by someone you trust.
Right.
I would be very wary of taking them from email if I wasn't expecting it.
Right, that you're expecting. That's the main thing. That Bob calls you and says, okay, Bart, I'm sending you a PowerPoint presentation, then you know it's okay, but under any other means. Okay. All right, but again, that's the least of our worries. It's even worse.
Well, better.
Or better.
Yeah, the biggest updates have come from our friends in Cupertino, which is good. We have security update 2009-002, which if you're in Tigerland still, is just a security update. And if you're in Leopardland, that update is combined with an update to the OS itself, 10.5.7. So 10.5.7 contains security update 2009-002 if you run Leopard. And if you run Tiger, you're only going to get security update 2009-002.
Okay, so I've been I'm friends with Tom Perino and Darren Rolf that do the Mac Nerd News, which also airs on the Mac Review Cast, and I've been giving them kind of a hard time because they've been saying things like, "Oh, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I'm not doing the latest security update. I'll wait till the next one." Let's give them a little chill down their spine, Bart, shall we? What would they be missing if they don't do this update?
Yeah, firstly, my answer to if it ain't broke, don't fix it is it's broke. Fix it.
Good point.
This is a very big update. I'm having a quick scroll through it, and I'm going to skip over the stuff we don't care about, so we don't care about Apache. One that I found was funny, it isn't going to be relevant to 99.9% of people because we don't yet use secure DNS or DNSSEC, but on OS X, if you had been using DNSSEC, you would be less secure than if you hadn't.
For regular humans, what is DNSSEC? What does SEC stand
for? It's basically DNS security is actually what it stands for. I don't even think it's an acronym.
Okay, so DNS. If you had DNS security on, you're in worse shape than if you had it off. That's a good one. What about for normal humans?
Yeah, the only people who would be likely to have that is if you're working within some government organizations that use DNSSEC. In the future, we're all going to be using it most probably because of the Kaminsky flow we talked about over and over and over again about a year ago. So that's not really likely to affect us, but I thought it was very funny. Stuff, let me see, where's the nasty stuff? There was a whole load of PDF fixes in here, at least three I counted. And basically, opening a maliciously crafted PDF file may lead to unexpected application termination or arbitrary code execution.
Oh, we like that, arbitrary code execution.
Yeah, that means open a PDF someone sent you that's naughty and they'll own your machine. So that's not good.
Own as in can see every single thing you're doing, capture your passwords, any bit of information, do anything they want to your machine.
Pretty much, that's it. Good. They can run any code they like.
What do you need Acrobat for if you've got that kind of vulnerability?
Let me see, what else is there in here? There's a bizarre one where visiting a maliciously crafted website may lead to unauthorized access to your printer.
Well, that could cost you a fortune if somebody just uses all your ink up. I guess that's a good one.
I guess, actually, if you're in some sort of environment where you're charging for printing and then the students are coming in and printing for free or something, that could cost money.
Yeah.
A really scary one, though, is mounting a maliciously crafted disk image could lead to arbitrary code execution.
Ooh, so like download a piece of software that you get a disk image.
Yeah, you expect disk images to be safe because you're just mounting them. But in this case, there was a flaw which would allow arbitrary code just by mounting the image. Even if you were to mount it and then look inside and go, oh my God, that's not what I expected at all. I'm not installing this. It'd be too late.
Wow.
So that's kind of scary. What else is there down here? There's a flash update, which is important, but I think we should have gotten those directly from Adobe anyway.
Okay.
Help viewer is another strange one. A maliciously crafted help URL could lead to arbitrary code execution.
Help. What is help by? Help doesn't have a URL meaning, does it?
Actually, you can have help colon whatever to specify a help URL.
Oh.
But a maliciously crafted one could lead to arbitrary code execution.
Great.
Let me see. What else is there here? Not important. Kernel. A local user may obtain system privileges. This is the so-called privilege escalation vulnerability. A lot of people think that because on OS X you have to enter a username and password to install something, that's the only way bad guys could ever get something installed. As long as there exists privilege escalation vulnerabilities, that is not true.
Oh, right.
So if you combine this one with an arbitrary code execution, they get arbitrary code execution as the admin user without a password being needed. So this is a very dangerous one when combined with any sort of arbitrary code execution.
So that's because if somebody could get control of a local user account, they can then escalate their privileges to be an admin account?
Exactly. So all of those arbitrary code executions would normally be running as you, but when you add in this exploit, they get to run as root.
Right. So if you're being smart and running as a non-administrative user and thinking you're safe, this would make you not safe.
Even if you're running as an administrative user, you still have to enter your password. Normally,
oh, right. Oh, but
except
this would,
for in this case.
Oh, that would execute it to that. Oh, yikes.
Yeah.
Nice.
So they're very bad. They're always bad. Privilege escalation vulnerabilities. What else have we got? Visiting a maliciously crafted website could lead to unexpected application termination or arbitrary code execution. So again, combine that with the privilege escalation and you get visit website be completely hacked. That simple, you know? There's all these kind of things. Network time protocol, that's only susceptible to spoofing. That's not so bad. Your clock could just be wrong. Another one that's a bit nasty is in networking. A remote user may be able to cause an unexpected system shutdown. You could have so much fun on a corporate network with this.
and that, which
go around killing machines.
That does sound fun, though.
I remember there was a previous flaw in Windows. It was called the ping of death. And if you sent that ping at any Windows machine on the network, it would shut down instantly. And I still remember a friend of mine, he's a friend now, I didn't like him at the time. He did that to the local jock in the class, and he responded by getting up off of his seat and taking a man into a headlock and beating the snot out of him.
That just takes all the fun out of the happy little prankster that he thought he was, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? I'm a lead hexer, you can't get me. I can't get you, you know, technologically, but I can beat the snot out of you.
Luckily for him, he was in the room with him, but...
Yeah, and let me see. Spotlight. Downloading a machinely crafted Microsoft Office file may lead to unexpected application termination or arbitrary code execution. WebKit. Visiting a machinely crafted website, arbitrary code execution, a bunch of X11 stuff. That's, yeah. There is more. There is a lot more. But they're just the ones that really jump out at me that we should talk about. And, you know, these are all real dangers. So clearly 10.5.6 is broken. So you clearly do need to update.
So
10.5.7 may also be broken, but at least these known issues will be fixed.
So for Tom and Darren, I mean, as long as they don't, use any PDF files, try to get any help, mount any disk image, visit any websites or download any Office files, they're okay with 10.5.6.
Yeah, so if they just turn their computer off and let it sit in the corner, they're perfectly safe.
Yeah, I just really wanted to emphasize that because I think that used to be the way we did it. I mean, I would never download the latest update until I watched it for a week or two to see if anybody had any trouble. But now your chances of trouble are greater, even if it was a botched update. You know, your chances of trouble are so much higher, I think, that it's just not worth the risk.
Yeah, any update from Apple that says it's a security update, you need to apply straight away without thinking. If it doesn't say it's a security update, then by all means, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
But the moment it's a security update, the rules have to change for your own sake. We used to live in computers that were little islands. Now we are all connected. And that changes the rules.
You know, I might be becoming a broken record here, but if you look at the worm that's going around, mm-hmm. they believe there's around 9 million computers in the world that are infected with that, and 100% of those could have been protected if people had downloaded the Microsoft update from October of last year. I mean, they didn't have to get this.
That's half true.
Why?
Because there are people out there who do not patch. There are people who do patch who are also vulnerable because Conficker is a really, really smart worm. So its first way in is that way. But once it's in your network, it starts to use auto-run files on network chairs and that kind of thing to infect machines that are not vulnerable to that particular exploit.
So, well, that gets back to what you just said then, that we're not running on islands. We can hurt each other. So it's sort of like being a good net citizen. Is you know, protect your friends and other people on your network. If you if you don't patch, you're hurting somebody else too, not only yourself.
Yeah, you're literally you're letting bad stuff in, and once it's in, it can do much more. Because once something is on your network, all the firewalls and everything else corporate IT may deploy to protect everyone else have been bypassed. You now have someone behind the defenses,
right? Yep.
So they can do way more damage.
Well, I'm much better at pushing that update button ever since talking to you so much. I've got ever-present vigilance.
Excellent. We do have one last update, which is Safari. And this is both for the people who are being futuristic and, in my opinion, running with those stupid tabs, who are running Safari 4, and for those of us running Safari 3, there is a security update. It only fixes two flaws. But both of them are visiting a maliciously crafted URL may cause arbitrary code execution, and visiting a maliciously crafted website may cause arbitrary code execution. So they're actually both serious.
Yeah. Now that's for Mac and Windows, correct?
They are Mac and Windows, yes.
Definitely important to get those done. Well, I hate to cut us off this quickly because we're used to rambling on and on and on, but we're coming up on our 15-minute deadline here so that we can fit the rest of the show in. I think this is going to be a long one. But you know what? People really miss hearing
us.
Yeah,
you know, we've covered all the big news, so we're done.
All right. You know, one of the things I really liked in the 200th episode, congratulations, was how many people said, you know, love Chit Chat Across the Pond. Love you and Bart. Bart's fantastic. So got to give them some of their Bartliness.
Bartliness. That's one of our Australian friends' terms. Is it Rose or Jane?
Oh, it's Rose.
Sounds like a Rose thing.
Oh, you're going to get a mean tweet for that. You know how jealous she gets of Jane.
It is Rose, isn't it?
Yes, it is Rose, definitely. Yeah.
So I was right.
There you go.
So I don't deserve any mean tweets.
Please, please. All right, Bart. Looks like we'll be able to talk next week.
Probably not, because I was supposed to be at my parents' this week installing the new iMac, but they read the thing wrong. So when they thought it said that their new iMac will arrive on the 12th, it said their new iMac would ship on the 12th.
Ah, okay.
So their iMac is in transit at the moment, and we're expecting it to arrive Monday or Tuesday. So I'll be going home next weekend to make it go.
All right. Well, we'll figure something out.
We will definitely figure something out. Until next time, happy computing.
Well, I know that was just a little bit of Bart, and we normally like more, but he'll be back next week, I promise. Well, to paraphrase the words of Carol Burnett, I'm so glad we had this time together. Seems we just get started, and before you know it, it comes the time when we have to say so long. Be sure to keep sending me emails, and especially those dumb questions, those questions you think are too stupid to ask, but I guarantee you somebody else wants to know the answer to you also. Heck, today I learned something on Dumb Question Corner. Off to Allison at podfeet.com, and be sure to follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. I promise.